Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Let's not play games. What I was suggesting, you're absolutely right that John McCain has not talked about my Muslim faith, and you're absolutely right that that has not
Christian
come
faith.
My Christian faith. What I think is fair to say is that coming out of the Republican camp, there have been efforts to suggest that perhaps I'm not who I say I am when it comes to my faith.
Blue Monday, how are you? Got to work like a slave all day. Here come Tuesday. Oh, Tuesday.
It's the lead story. Obama has admitted he's a Muslim, and you've got cover-up artists like Lou Dobbs saying that we shouldn't be talking about a slip of the tongue. Look, the fact of the matter is, if you investigate Obama's background, he was raised both as a Muslim and as a Christian. Now, that's well and good. He should just come out and admit it. I have nothing against moderate Muslims. They're part of the domestic tapestry and the international tapestry. They are as much opposed to radical Islam as I am. The question is, why is he covering up his Muslim faith? Is he, in fact, a member of the moderate Muslim wing of the Muslim religion? I would hope so. You may say, well, how can you jump to the conclusion that he isn't? Because I'm worried about the man. Why? Because of his left-wing communist connections and friends. Now, look, Obama has admitted he's a Muslim. ABC immediately covered for him. In fact, if you listen to that clip, George Stephanopoulos, a hack for Bill Clinton, immediately says to him, you mean your Christian faith? He didn't even realize he slipped the tongue. He was telling you what he was thinking. Play the first part of that again so that people can hear it.
Let's not play games. What I was suggesting, you're absolutely right that John McCain has not talked about my Muslim faith, and you're absolutely right that that has not
Christian
come.
Faith.
You notice that George Stephanopoulos, the former Clinton apologist, jumps in and says, your Christian faith. When have you ever heard of a newsman covering for a politician? The answer is forever, which is why the newspapers are going out of business, which is why ABC, CBS, and NBC are plummeting. The answer is that George Stephanopoulos covered up for Barack Hussein Obama. And in doing so, he revealed himself in a way that the liberal media has refused to do since he started running for president. In this supposed, quote, slip of the tongue, Obama Hussein referred to his Muslim faith, once and for all exposing the truth about his past, a truth that all the party apparatchiks and all the liberal talking heads in all America have not been able to cover up. Some say it was a Freudian slip. I say it was a different kind of slip. I say it was a truthful slip. Perhaps the most horrible part of this entire incident is the fact that as soon as Obama had said the words Muslim faith, the Democrat lackey George Stephanopoulos stepped in to help him. The words Muslim faith came so naturally to him that Obama didn't bother to correct himself. But Stephanopoulos immediately jumped in and said Christian faith. You know why? The left protects its own. The question is, though, how did Muslim Obama get this far? How did a Muslim stealth candidate manage to become the anointed candidate of one of the two major parties in the United States of America? The answer is very clear. It is the collusion of the media with the Democrat Party. They would rather see someone questionable like Obama in office as long as he's not a Republican. The media covered up this inconvenient truth about Barack Hussein Obama because it did not fit into their storyline. And what is that storyline? The heroic black presidential candidate who would save America from its evil racist past. The media used Obama's race as an excuse to support him and refused to look any deeper than that. Now, even today, when this is the only story worth talking about, the media refuses to give it any attention. CNN talks about the weather. Fox talks about OJ. MSNBC talks about itself. But I, Michael Savage, will talk about this story. I will play the clip of this Mohammedan slip again and again and again until America realizes that it is too dangerous to vote for Barack Hussein Obama. I will play this clip until America realizes that it's a choice between an ex-Navy pilot and a community activist. I'll play this clip until America realizes it's a choice between someone who shot rockets at our enemies in battle and someone who shot staples into a telephone pole. This is the Savage Nation. Plague Blue Monday. It's a very blue Monday for Barack Hussein Obama.
Blue Monday, how I hate Blue Monday. Got to work like a slave all day. Here come Tuesday.
All right, here come Tuesday. Let me repeat again. We now have a clear choice. As imperfect as McCain is, as liberal as McCain is, we now have a clear choice between someone who shot rockets at our enemies in battle, from a fighter jet, by the way, and someone who shot staples into a telephone pole. You have to make that choice. The question to the audience is this. Here is your question. If you are a diehard Democrat or a diehard independent, has this so-called slip of the tongue changed your mind in any way? And if not, why not? If yes, why yes? Have you made up your mind and has something changed? The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. And let me tell you something else. There's another huge story. For about a year now, I've been calling George Bush a fiscal socialist. He is a fiscal socialist. What would you call the bailout of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac but socialism? If Chavez nationalizes banks, what do you say? He's a communist and he's our enemy? But if Bush nationalizes banks, which is what he has done, what do you call him, a great capitalist Republican? I have told you George Bush is a fiscal socialist. But many of you are moronic. Many of you have no idea what you're talking about. Many of you don't know the first thing about what socialism or capitalism entails. Many of you shouldn't have the right to vote. You're so stupid. How do you like that? I'm getting so angry at my audience, you have no idea. Maybe it's time for me to step off the stage. I cannot deal with morons. I can't throw pearls before swine anymore. George Bush is a fiscal socialist. He nationalized two major banks. Chavez does it, and he's called a communist because he wears a red beret. Bush does it. He nationalizes two banks, and you say nothing? Now, you got to ask yourself, why is Bush nationalizing Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac? And why are the boards of directors of these two banks not in handcuffs? I want to know why the board of directors of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are not doing the perp walk. They robbed you blind. They stole from the Treasury. They should be in jail. Not fueling up their jets to go to Switzerland for another conference on how to screw the American people. They have names. Who are they? Who is on the board of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac? Who did this to you? Would you like to know the names? I've given them to you, boys and girls. I gave them to you before the summer vacation, before you cooked your brain on Mai Tais and hot sun. They have names. Why are they not in jail? If you do not pay your tickets, if you have one drink too many, you can lose your car and your license and go to San Quentin in California. But if you rob the American taxpayer to the tune of billions of dollars, or if you shield illegal aliens who gun down innocent civilians in the streets of San Francisco, you don't go to jail. Instead, you go to elected office. This is the Savage Nation. I'm pissed off. You should be pissed off. You deserve better. You're taking this great inheritance called the Republic, and you are squandering it. You are squandering it, and you have an obligation to yourself, if to no one else. Certainly, I wouldn't say you have an obligation to your country. Most of you don't even know what a country is. I love my country. Do you love your country? If you love your country, why do you let George Bush get away with this? I'm going to tell you something, and I'll say it right now. I would welcome an impeachment investigation of George Bush. You can put me on record for that. I would welcome an impeachment investigation of George Bush and Hank Paulson. Who is Hank Paulson? Hank Paulson is the Treasury Secretary. Why is his name in this discussion? Because he is the former CEO of Goldman Sachs. What does Goldman Sachs have to do with the bailout of these banks? Everything. Everything imaginable. Everything imaginable. You have five library books that are overdue by 30 days. You might get a knock on the door and you might be arrested. They could even send the tax squad for all we know. rob banks for billions of dollars, you get an invitation to the White House. This is the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. There are other stories. Would you like to hear them? Here's one. U.S. is more communist than China. Who wrote that? Well, isn't it interesting? That's CNBC. It's on michaelsavage.com. They agree with me. Who wrote this editorial? Somebody who knows what Bush just did. It is Jim Rogers, CEO of Rogers Holdings. He told CNBC Europe on Monday the following. He said, the nationalization of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac shows that the U.S. is, quote, more communist than China right now, but its brand of socialism is meant only for the rich. I'll go on with the quote. America is more communist than China is right now. You can see that this is welfare of the rich. It is socialism for the rich. It is just bailing out financial institutions, Rogers said. Did you hear me? He went on. This is madness. This is insanity. They have more than doubled the American national debt in one weekend for a bunch of crooks and incompetents. I'm not quite sure why or anybody else should be paying for this. I am telling you that unless the boards of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are arrested, there's going to be a tax revolt in America that you haven't seen since the Boston Tea Party, but it'll be no Tea Party. This is the Savage Nation. Pay attention. Be here. Savage.
We have determined that it is necessary to take action. Our economy and our markets will not recover until the bulk of this housing correction is behind us. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are critical to turning the corner on housing.
Let's not play games. What I was suggesting, you're absolutely right that John McCain has not talked about my Muslim faith. And you're absolutely right that has not
Christian
come.
Faith.
So on one side, we have a capitalist crook. On the other side, we have a unknown factor who is a Muslim and a Christian. And we do not know where his true loyalties lie. There's no question we don't know where Hussein's loyalties lie. We know this, that with regard to the presidential election, we now have a clear choice between someone named John McCain who shot rockets at our enemies from a flying jet versus someone who shot staples into a telephone pole as a community activist. We also have a problem on the other side of capitalist crooks who are bailing out their friends in the banking industry, which is absolutely communistic and socialistic and criminal, and not one peep from a Democrat. Now, why is it that if Bush bailed out the banks, your great Democrat friends of the people said nothing? There should have been a press conference Monday morning. Why have the Democrats said nothing? Answer, because they're owned by the same puppet masters, you schmucks. Don't you understand this? How many years have I told you that it's a two-card Monty game and the deck is stacked against we the people? How many times have I told you there's three shells on the table and there's no pee under any shell? Don't you get it yet? I am telling you that we need to demand jail for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac board directors. They must be immediately arrested, indicted, and tried for what they've done to us. Now, who are on the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac boards? Quite a few names. Does the name Jamie Gorelick ring a bell to you? Jamie Gorelick is the former chairman and CEO of who? Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. She recently led Senator Barack Obama's vice presidential search team. Who else is on it? Franklin D. Raines, former chairman and CEO. He is the budget director under Clinton. Robert Zoellick, former executive vice president, former deputy secretary of state and U.S. trade rep under George W. Bush, currently president of the World Bank. And here comes a shocker. Louis J. Free, board member, former director of the FBI under Clinton, federal judge. There are other names you never heard of. Who's on the board of Freddie Mac? Some of the names you never heard of. Some of them you have heard of. Harold Ickes, does the name ring a bell? Representative Rahm Emanuel, former board member, senior advisor to Clinton. There are many names you know of. Susan Molinari, outside lobbyist, U.S. Congresswoman from New York, on the board of Freddie Mac. That's why you haven't heard a word from the Democrats nor from the Republicans. That's why we the people have fundamentally abrogated our responsibilities. We've given the keys to the kingdom to two bands of thieves. There's nothing we can do about it. There's virtually nothing we can do about it. We're living in a dictatorship. And the fact of the matter is there are a few people who know it. And one of them happens to be an arch capitalist who runs a huge fund And he said that America is more communist than China is right now. He said, you can see that this is welfare of the rich, which it is socialism for the rich. Do you know that in doing this, they have more than doubled the American national debt in one weekend for a bunch of crooks and incompetents, said Rogers? You didn't read that on CNN's website. You didn't read that on Fox's website. You didn't read that or hear that anywhere. Why? Because of the government media complex. So there's two major topics. One is a stealth Muslim candidate named Obama. The other is the party of the rich under McCain. You take your choice, you pay your money. At the end, you're going to get it in the end. No matter what you do, you're going to get it in the end. Nobody's looking out for any of us. That's my opinion. And that's why I'm jaundiced on the entire political system. I know many of you say, oh, you should back McCain. Fine, I backed McCain. Great, you happy now? Oh, I backed McCain. Hey, hallelujah. Raise the flags. Float the balloons. Get back to me in February or March. Get back to me in February or March because Obama's not president. We missed the bullet. And what did we get instead? We'll find out in March through June. San Francisco, KNEW. Rick, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, I just wanted to agree with you that people should be going to jail for the Freddie Mac, Fannie Mac take.
Well, they should be indicted and tried to see if they profited from this. How much money did they put away in the bank? How much money did they make while being on the boards of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac? Why are they not being questioned?
Yeah, but also
they hold congressional hearings on steroid use in baseball players. Like it matters to me. It means nothing to me who uses steroids. Nothing. Why don't the great Democrat frauds hold a hearing on the debacle called Freddie Mae and Fannie Mac and let us know how much money they made? I want to see their bank accounts before, during, and after their appointment to these boards. I want to know where that money is. I want to know what banks they put it in. I want to know if they even put it into American banks or they converted it to euros and took it out of the country. It's a scandal unlike any in American history. It is bigger than the Teapot Dome scandal. I can name five American financial scandals. They are all dwarfed by what George Bush and Henry Paulson have just pulled over on your eyes. Oh, but you're concerned about steroids in baseball players. You hear this? It's astounding to me what they can get away with a collusion between them and the media. Why? Because the media and the government are fundamentally one gigantic entity.
Savage.
Four minutes after the hour, you're listening to the Savage Nation. It's an extremely agitating day when you consider the fact that ABC is covering for Obama when he says, I am a Muslim and my Muslim faith, and it doesn't get covered by the media. Wait. And then on the other side of the aisle, you see that Bush's bailout of Freddie Mae and Fannie Mac, which is communism, socialism, whatever you want to call it, it's nationalizing banks, is not covered by the media to the same extent that you would expect. It's an astonishing reversal. Now, why is this story not a major story? Why are these two stories not major stories? Because the government media complex deems that they're not supposed to be talked about. Do you get that? New York City, WOR. John, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, I agree with everything you're saying, but I really believe that it's in the country's overall best interest that he does bail out the banks because he didn't. I know they're crooks, and I know that they're...
All right, we've heard that it's good for the economy. So if you put what's good for the economy ahead of all other considerations, legality, does it match our economic system, why doesn't the government just go ahead and seize profitable businesses throughout America? Let's say a young man built a profitable candy company. It would be very good for the economy if Paulson said we're going to nationalize the candy company because it's good for the economy. And we may even put the young entrepreneur who created the candy company in prison because he is not entitled to his own company and his own money. Why should anybody be that selfish that a man created a company on his card table and it's worth $1 billion? So we're going to nationalize any company in America that was built by a single person that's making over $100 million a year because that's good for the economy. And moreover, in order to show you how fair we are, we're going to imprison the entrepreneurs because they're an insult to the poor people. Would that also be good for the economy? Sure it would be, but is it legal? Of course not. Thanks for the call. 1-800-449-8255. Go to michaelsavage.com. And you're going to see an interesting article, many interesting articles, as a matter of fact. The best one up there, I can't categorize or stack them in order. There's so many good ones today. monologue. It's a choice between someone who shot rockets at our enemies from an airplane and someone who shot staples from a onto telephone poles. That's a great monologue. It's on the headline. On the right side, you will see an ad for my book, Psychological Nudity. Beneath it is a super web commentary article by Barbara Anderson. And I feel obligated to read it for two reasons. One, because it promotes me and nobody else will. Two, because it actually is an interesting phenomenon to understand what she's saying. I'll read you a few sentences from Barbara's The Complete Savage. When it comes to observing and analyzing the state of the country, nobody equals Michael Savage. His listeners are used to hearing him comment on things political. Now he has taken time to remind them that he also often entertains with stories from his past. Michael Savage has announced a new book, Psychological Nudity, which will be released in the fall. It is a rare limited first edition. His has been a prolific career, having written 25 books, several of which have appeared in the New York Times bestseller list. By the way, it's four in a row. Just as he exhibits an eclectic bent in his radio commentary, so has Savage promised the same in his new book. Psychological Nudity denotes an encompassing tell-all, but is not the stuff of the tabloid autobiographies of famous and would-be famous people. Instead, it is a compendium of favorite stories gathered throughout Savage's lifetime. Turns out that Savage's favorites are his listeners' favorites, too. His is the story of the American dream, the up-from-the-bootstrap struggle so many have tried. Savage's triumph was remarkable in that he has excelled in many fields. His fulfillment of the American dream took several paths, but always kept him founded in his devotion to language, borders, and culture. This is his inner core, his very breath. Savage is still honing his skill, seeking out the common person. He often also finds the uncommon person in his travels about the streets. One title in the story of his new book, Talking to a Bum About God, seems typical. Although he professes to be a loner, his curiosity about people takes him right up against them on his way through the streets of San Francisco. Even the titles whet the appetite. What was he doing in the Fiji Islands in 1969? And what's up with When Pasta Was Spaghetti? What does Savage have to tell us about My Silent Brother? We are bound to learn and to be saddened also. His brother's story gave us an insight as to how those different from us are treated. The forward, the autism storm, was the result of aroused passions in the airing of this condition, but also got some publicity for it and led to a much-needed general discussion. One of the most endearing traits a man possesses is a regard for his mother. Savage remembers his own fondly and often. She is here in Mama Savage Calls. Tied into the influence of his mother is the story of From Immigrant Son to Radio Stardom. Savage remembers his roots and those who shaped him into his present self. The book has over 75 stories, as unique as Savage presents himself to his listeners every day. They are given by a master storyteller, fueled by a life full of interesting encounters. It promises to have something that appeals to everybody. For the politically addicted, so they won't suffer pangs of withdrawal, Savage has added several commentaries as a bonus. Among them are, what if John McCain's middle name was Jesus? The medical reason why liberalism is a mental disorder. Debunking man-induced global warming. Republicans should treat voters like restaurant customers. And Savage for president. And that is The Complete Savage. And I thank you, Barbara Anderson. 1-800-449-8255. Phone number. Let us go to the callers around America and around the state of California. San Francisco, Dan, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please. Dan is not there. What a follow-up to my own editorial. You know, Chicago, Aaron, you're on the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Yeah, this is back to the bailout. There's one name I'm not hearing, and he should be added to your list of indictments, and that is Ben Bernanke and the entire board of the Federal Reserve. I believe.
Do you happen to know how much money is going to be made by this bailout? I have a list of some of it. The New York Times came out with an article today saying few stand to gain on this bailout and many lose by Eric Dash. And it shows this. It says, over the years, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac showered riches on many winners, their executives, Wall Street bankers and Washington lobbyists. Now the foundering mortgage giants are leaving some losers in their wake, notably their shareholders, rank-and-file employees, and in the worst case, American taxpayers. But he goes on. Under the terms of his employment contract, Daniel H. Mudd, the departing head of Fannie Mae, stands to collect $9.3 million in severance pay, retirement bennies, and deferred comp. Richard F. Siren, the departing chief exec of Freddie Mac, could receive an exit package of at least $14.1 $1 million, largely because of a clause added to his employment contract just this last July as his company's trouble deepened. Are you listening to me? He has taken home $17.1 million in pay and stock options since becoming chief executive in 2003. Both executives stood to make millions more from restricted stock grants and options, but those awards are now worthless because of the plunge in the company's share prices. Even so, their past pay and the idea that they might receive more irks some investors. So one is going to get about $9.3 million. Richard Styron changed his contract in July as the company's company was going in the toilet, and he's now going to take home $17.1 million. And if your kid should lift a package of bubble gum from a candy store, he'll go to a juvie hall. If they lift $17.1 million, they get invited to the White House to a black tie dinner. It's upside down. It's all wrong. We the people have to demand that there's an immediate congressional hearing on not the bailout of Freddie Mae and Freddie Mac. No, I don't want another Dianne Feinstein charade. I want to know how much money they made over the last 10 years, each of them. I want to see their income before, during, and after. Every board member on both Freddie Mae and Fannie Mac. I want to see it. You should demand it too. Is anyone listening to this other than the people? Sure. But do they work for the people? I doubt it. Will there be a congressional investigation? If there is, it'll be a cover-up run by Dianne Feinstein. I'm telling you, I know what I'm talking about here, and you know it too. Grand Rapids, Kevin, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead,
hey,
please.
Dr. Savage, thank you very much for all your truth and everything. I'm a one-time Iraq vet. I was wounded there twice. My son's
sorry
there
to hear
right
it.
Now. And when Barack Hussein Obama toured the world there with all the news media behind him, the day he touched down back in America, the first meeting he had was with Paulson for 2 or 3 hours, and I'll bet they talked about this subject.
Well, I wonder why Obama, the man of the people, the Robin Hood who would rob from the rich to give to the poor, has nothing to say about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac bailouts.
Right. Well, why would you meet with Paulson?
Why? Because Paulson's the true president of the United States of America. Why should he meet with George Bush? George Bush has he's an absentee landlord.
Absolutely.
Paulson runs the nation's financial policies. He's the head of the U.S. Treasury. Who else would you meet with? The guy who runs the banks. It's always been the same. But you noticed that Obama dummied up, didn't you, after the meeting?
Absolutely. It was never even in the paper. You couldn't even find that story anywhere.
I hear you, man. There's nothing I can say. What am I going to say? I'm pointing out a big story. Yeah, you've all read about the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac bailout, but what have I told you that's new? I've told you that people are making fortunes on the bailout that you haven't heard yet today. Why? Because I am the only person in the winner's circle in talk radio, meaning in the top five. I'm actually number three. I am the only one who is bringing this up and talking about the boards of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Why? Because the other two are involved in the government media complex, in my opinion. They are owned by companies that have interlocking corporate directorships who overlap from one company to the other, and they don't touch certain subjects. That's why I'm such a wild loose cannon, so they say on the deck, and so why people love me. The people listen, love this show. Let's make no mistake about it. The people need this show like they need a drug. They need me badly because they don't know where to turn for it. They're tired of the charade. But many people above the level of the people are terrified of Michael Savage's truth. They cannot take the searing iron, the hot iron of reality. They can't get it, and they don't want it. They just don't want it. And I'm telling you right now, the chances of truth surviving the next administration are very low. If I were a betting man, I'd say lower than you could imagine. Interestingly, a new story just was published by John Lilpot, which is very interesting. And he's asking this question, which is fascinating. As you well know, the Democrats want to induce the fairness doctrine, so-called. Now, we also know that Oprah Winfrey has refused to interview Sarah Palin. Now, the question is, would the fairness doctrine force Oprah Winfrey to interview Sarah Palin? Interesting question. Now, the writer, John Lilpot, says that Winfrey apparently finds Sarah Palin too white for her television show. On the other hand, Barack Obama seems to blend in nicely with Winfrey's biases and prejudices. He then asks the big question, how might Winfrey react if she were forced to interview Sarah Palin by a fascist government bent on enforcing the resurrected fairness doctrine? I'll let you ponder that. This is the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
I'm now moving on to the second bankruptcy in the United States, which is the bankruptcy of immigration policy. There's another article that'll break your heart from the Denver Post. Suspected illegal kills a toddler and two women in a hit and run. But wait, it gets worse. He was never deported despite 16 arrests in 5 years. It gets even worse than that. On the right of Michael Savage, there's a story from my local area of a police officer, a crack shot, who died trying to save six captives. Again, if you look at it, your heart could break. The man has three children of his own. He tried to save three women and three screaming children from a crazed gunman. And Martinez police officer Paul Starzik paid with his life. Now, here's a man that every cop listening to this show should somehow salute in some way. You should go onto my website and take a look at this guy. This guy is a former banker who gave up banking to become a cop. Now, why would the man do that? Why would a banker become a cop? Could it be because he wanted to really perform public service, unlike our bankers? So he goes into a narrow hallway leading to a second floor apartment here in Martinez, California. And they try to go in to save three women, three screaming children from a crazed gunman. But before they could get in, gunman Felix Sandoval, does the name ring a bell? Sandoval? It should ring a bell because there was a supervisor in the city of San Francisco named Sandoval, certainly not involved in this murder. But he was the lead individual who condemned Michael Savage for standing up to the illegal aliens who were trying to take scholarships that they were not entitled to. And by the way, the same board of supervisors has yet to condemn Bernie Ward, who is in prison for having transferred images of children as young as 3 years of age in full sexual contact with adults. The same vermin on the San Francisco board of supervisors who condemned me have nothing to say about a child, a guy who transferred child pornography like that. It just shows you why the city is bankrupt. What vermin we have running this. Anyway, Mr. Sandoval, who's threatening the women and children, a different Sandoval, of course, pokes a hand out from behind the door and blindly opens fire with a .38 caliber pistol. Just starts shooting, doesn't even see where. He hits Officer Starzik, a 47-year-old sergeant, in his bulletproof. He's wearing a bulletproof vest. But by chance, this bum, this piece of garbage, by chance, gets around the bulletproof vest and kills the sergeant. Starzik initially returns fire along with Officer Leung, but he was fatally wounded. Within minutes, officials said, Sandoval was shot dead by a third officer who responded to the apartment and unleashed a German Shepherd. God bless the police dogs. Once inside the apartment, authorities found a 44-year-old woman, the cousin of Sandoval's estranged wife, dead in the kitchen. And the rest of the story is there. You want to hear it? Sandoval's a 49-year-old retired laborer. He's retired. Oh, he's retired, is he? And he's living on disability payments from the once great state of California? Oh, by the way, he had a recent arrest for methamphetamine use. And he intended to attack his wife. And look what the cops had to go clean up, the human garbage. The cops have to pick up the human garbage, and they get killed for it. Incidentally, Officer Starzik was the father of two young boys and a girl. The Chicago native was a banker until his early 30s, and then he joined the Martinez Force as a volunteer reserve before his permanent hiring in 1995. He was a former leader. Listen to this. This is the cop. Former leader of the agency SWAT team, and he taught other officers how to shoot weapons properly and how to deal with armed suspect. He was promoted in December to sergeant. Wait, it gets better. On the side, he volunteered at a soup kitchen. This is the man who was killed by this meth head. So I'll stop right there because I'm liable to say something I really mean. And then you'll really get mad at me, those of you who'll say that I'm not sympathetic enough to Mr. Sandoval, who was retired as a laborer. He was retired, I guess, from his job as a laborer in order to devote himself to his full-time job of using methamphetamine. So Martinez cop dies trying to save six captives. And you know what I'll have to do here? I'll tell you exactly what I'm going to do here. I'm going to try and raise money for the widow and for the children. I did it for one other person. I'll do it for another person. In fact, I'll go a step further. I'll make a commitment on the show right now. Anytime an officer is severely wounded or killed in a line of duty, as long as I'm alive, as long as I'm on the radio, I'm going to donate money and I'm going to set up a fund for the widow and for the children. Does that work for you? Because if a man can't do a little bit of good while he's alive, I can guarantee you there's going to be a lot of bad done to him after he's dead. Now let's go back to the stories. By the way, you can read more about this heartbreaker about Officer Starzik. The part that kills me the most is that the human offal, the human waste in a body form that killed him, is going to get more sympathy from the vermin in San Francisco than will the officer. This human, this turd with legs, who thank God is dead, is going to have more apologists and more sympathy than will the hero officer. I can't say I'm used to this. One can never get used to psychotic liberals. And that's that story. So if you're a cop or the wife of a cop, go and read the story, and I'll try to get something going for the widow. Bay, we'll see if you can get her. Well, I wouldn't ask her on the show. See if you can get someone to talk for him and set up a fund, if there's a fund for the widow. And I'll make a donation, as I did last week, for the other widow. In that case, not of an officer, but of an innocent man and two sons gunned down by an illegal alien gang member, protected by the mayor and the supervisors of the city of San Francisco. Now let's go back to the other stories of the day. They're pretty sad. What do we get from the bailout? Fannie Mae. What should be done to these people? What about Obama admitting he's a Muslim? These are major league stories. They're good stories. They're important stories. And here's a kicker for the hour. This came out. Global warming's kaput. 2008 is the coolest in 5 years. Phil Brennan wrote it on Newsmax. And he said the first half of this year was the coolest in at least 5 years, according to the World Meteorological Organization. And the global warming that has taken place during the past 30 years is over, says geologist Don J. Easterbrook. Easterbrook said that he's putting his reputation on the line by predicting not global warming, but global cooling. So, ladies and gentlemen, Al Gore is the biggest liar in the history of American politics. Don't confuse him with a scientist. He has as much relationship to a scientist as a rock does.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We have determined that it is necessary to take action. Our economy and our markets will not recover until the bulk of this housing correction is behind us. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are critical to turning the corner on housing.
Let's not play games. What I was suggesting, you're absolutely right that John McCain has not talked about my Muslim faith, and you're absolutely right that that has not
Christian
come
faith.
My Christian faith.
So we have crooked capitalists on one side of the aisle and an unknown on the other side. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. When it comes to the election, I'm afraid to tell you that although on one hand, with regard to national security, it's a clear choice between someone who shot rockets at our enemies from a flying jet while in battle and someone who shot staples into a telephone pole. When it comes to other issues, I don't think that there's a big difference between George Bush and John McCain. I know many of you don't want to hear it, but it's Bush 3 versus Marx 2. And of course, if it's a choice between Bush 3 and Marx 2, I'll take Bush 3. That does not mean that I want Bush 3. It means I'm stuck with Bush 3. And I got to tell you something else. With regard to the takeover of Freddie Mae and Fannie Mae, when I heard John McCain say it had to be done, I really got very, very severely disappointed, because it's not something that necessarily has to be done. As a matter of fact, it is a move that you would expect Hugo Chavez to make, nationalizing banks. If Chavez does it, why you scream he's a communist, he's a threat to our society. But if Bush does it, you say, oh, hell, hell, he's a Republican. He's doing the right thing. Do you know that the national debt has doubled over the weekend? Do you have any idea what this is going to do to your children? Bush is a fiscal socialist, not a fiscal conservative. That's why things are so messed up. I've told you this for well over a year now when I discovered what Bush was doing. Growing government, making sure his friends' nests were feathered. That's not fiscal conservatism. It's fiscal socialism. And you have to, again, understand what this really means to you. It means nothing to you other than your dollar is worth less. And it means an awful lot to Bush's and Paulson's buddies on Wall Street. And make no mistake about it, some people are going to be very, very handsomely rewarded. Already there are those who've made tens of millions of dollars by working for Freddie Mae and Fannie Mae. In my opinion, there should be an immediate bipartisan investigation, not hand-holding, not a cover-up by Dianne Feinstein, but an investigation of personal wealth by directors of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. What was their wealth before, during, and after? Did they change their contracts in the last 6 months to enrich themselves? If so, their assets should be seized, and they should be imprisoned for not less than 10 years and not more than 30 years. Will it happen? Impossible. Why? Because they have bought out members of both parties. We do not have an independent governmental agency that will investigate this. They're all owned by the same interlocking board of directors. Under the terms of his employment contract, Daniel H. Mudd, the departing head of Fannie Mae, stands to collect $9.3 million in severance pay, retirement bennies, and deferred comp. Mr. Mudd had already taken home $12.4 million in cash comp and stock option gains since becoming chief executive of this burnt-out, busted-out company when he started in 2004. Now, there's another man who was named today by the New York Times who should be investigated, in my opinion. Richard F. Syron, the departing chief exec of Freddie Mac, could receive an exit package of at least $14.1 million. Now, listen, here's the kicker. He's going to get $14.1 million, largely because of a clause added to his employment contract just in July, just as his company's troubles deepened. He has taken home $17.1 million in pay and stock option gains since becoming chief executive in 2003. My friends, this is outright thievery. Now, if you went to high school, you learned about a period of American history when the robber barons were running America. The robber barons were paupers compared to what Bush and his cronies have done to this country. The robber barons were pikers compared to what these thieves are doing to you right now. The only question is, what can you do back? I haven't any answer for you. I have no authority. I have no voice in this government. I do represent myself in my conversations with you. But I know that I represent your outrage. I speak for you. I'm an independent talk show host. You have nowhere else to go. I can guarantee you, as I sit here, and I haven't listened to the other shows, and I don't listen to the other shows, I can guarantee you, you're not going to hear anyone in the top three calling for an investigation of the boards of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And that's because of interlocking corporate directorships, which I have warned you about. Do you understand what I just said to you? What do I mean by interlocking corporate directorships? I may as well explain it again. This was a big thing in the 1960s when liberals, the real liberals, not the fake progressives of today, real liberals of the 60s warned America about the growth of interlocking corporate directorships. What that meant was a board member might sit on a pharmaceutical firm, and that same board member might also sit on a newspaper board and on a television board. So if a company that made a drug saw the drug causing any ill effects on individuals, he then hop over to his put on his hat as a newspaper executive and make sure that his editors were taken to dinner and understood the story was to be buried on page A19. He would then put on the next hat and jump over to the television network, and he'd make sure some of his empty suits or empty skirts didn't even cover the story of the dangers of the drug because he sat on the board of the drug company. That, my friends, is interlocking corporate directorship means. What was warned about in the 60s has come to the forefront in a way you could never imagine. Today we have not only interlocking corporate directorships, we have interlocking corporate / government directorships. We have people leaving investment banks on Wall Street to become secretaries of the Treasury, and they reward themselves and their friends on Wall Street, and nobody goes to jail except their former competitors. If this is not outright thievery and outright bribery and outright corruption and outright fraud, I'd like you to define it for me. I'd like you to define it for me. Tell me if this is not corruption and fraud. And who's going to pay for it? You are. You are, because the debt that has been incurred by the nationalization of these banks, and let me repeat the word. What do you mean bailout? What does a bailout mean? It means the government has nationalized these banks, these mortgage banks. If Hugo Chavez does it, oh, you want the government to invade Venezuela. Well, he nationalized the banks. He's a commie. Why, he's a commie down there, that Chavez. Bush nationalizes two of the biggest banks in the world in terms of assets and in terms of debts, and you say nothing. You say it's good for the economy. Don't you understand what you're saying? It's the death of capitalism. It's the end of the free market. George Bush is involving himself in fiscal socialism, as I've warned you for at least a year now. But what can I do about it? What can any of us do about it? You listen to Obama. He says, well, I've warned you about it. That's what he said today. We should have seen it coming. But he didn't say that he'd investigate when he becomes president, and he would imprison those who were profited by it unfairly. And McCain, we needed the bailout. You hear this? Bush 3. It's Bush 3. Make no mistake about it. I know you don't want to hear it. I know you want to hear he's all of a sudden the savior. This get-along, go-along compromise of John McCain is suddenly going to save America. This is utterly unbelievable to me. 1-800-449-8255. I need to take a break to go to a commercial message to my fine advertisers. I would invite you to listen to them very carefully. And when I come back, I'm going to regale you with a wonderful story from my new book, Psychological Nudity, that will at least break some of the tension that we're all living through. All I can tell you is that in my childhood, this never would have happened. Anyone who would have tried this would have been put in prison or deported. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Joe en Paul, laat door haar knieken, brabarilla Joe en Paul, dat weet je bully krieken, brabarilla zoet, hij koud, hij giet een zolen perfect, hij veet een daftier, kuiven, door bij Joe en Paul.
Oh, God, look what I have to do for a living. I should have been a tailor. I could have sat in front of a treadle, not talked to anybody, just smoked Philip Morris and died at 47. Poor grandpa, didn't have a chance, came over, brought the family over one by one from Europe. He ate his heart out in that tailor store on the Lower East Side, made suits for guys, nice suits, never got anywhere. Well, he owned his own store. He moved up. But he didn't have to talk to people like I do 3 hours a day, eating his heart out. I don't know. They all died so young. They had easier jobs than me. Why they dropped dead? I can't understand. It had to be the cigarettes. Don't say stress, because my stress level is 10 times worse than theirs. So don't give me that stress garbage. Mine is 100 times worse. I should have been dead at 11 with my personality and my consciousness. Stress is I studied this. The reason I went into nutrition and herbal medicine and looked for the searches all over the world and wrote all those books is because everyone died young in my family from heart attacks. And stress has almost nothing to do with coronary artery disease. Nothing. Zero. Don't believe a word of it. Life is stress by definition. Don't you understand that? And the more you struggle against stress, the more stressed out you are. Just accept that stress is life. And when you die, you have no stress. You know what I mean? Or if you move to Queens, one or the other. The point I'm making is stress has almost nothing to do with it. It's 90%. Okay, let me tell you what I've discovered and what the medical literature says. And please don't call me on this. We all know it anyway, but let me just say it again. It's about one-third, one-third, one-third for any disease. One-third genetics, one-third environment, and one-third unknown. There's an unknown factor in disease. Don't you understand that yet? I learned this in graduate school when I was going for my PhD. I'll never forget my professor. He was a medical doctor and a PhD, and he said to me, you know, he says, I've opened up people at autopsy who've died of heart attacks whose arteries are perfectly clean. Now, that's a mind blower. No occlusion. You know, Lipitor and garlic and vitamin, nothing. The arteries were clean like a baby, and they dropped dead of a heart attack anyway. So there's a mystery to disease. You understand that there's a mysterious element to disease, as there is to so much else in life. There's a mystery to love. There's a mystery to life. Not everything is so cut and dried. So that's what I say. It's a third environment, which means smoking, exercise, nutrition, eating. A third genetics where you have nothing. You can't do anything about it. And then a third mystery. Now, since you can't affect your genetics, you can't affect your unknowns, you work on the others. That's all. You don't eat like a pig. That's all. You eat like a sane person who wants to live, and you take mega doses of vitamin E and vitamin C and all of the other B vitamins that you need to know, and you got to learn all of that stuff. And then you pray a lot. You pray to God every night that you don't drop dead and leave your children without a father at a very early age. That's everyone in their 30s, 18 times a day, they're touching their chest. Oh, yeah, that's it. They're driving in the car. How many guys listening to this show are laughing right now? They're driving. They're in their 30s. I imagine this because I know it. It was like the 30s are the worst age in life. In the 20s, you're still like, I'm not going to live forever. Nothing's going to affect me. You're in the post-teenage years. Nothing. Then in the 30s, you get the first gray hairs. You get a little flab on your stomach. And every day, if you're married and have children, I mean, if not, well, you can get away with another 10 years. Every day in your 30s, you're driving. Oh, what's that twinge? Oh, and you're sure you're going to go off on the side of the road upside down. You're going to be an embarrassment to your family, dying a horrendous death from the big one. So many guys in their 30s. But let me tell you something. It gets easier as you get older. Because once you realize you are going to die, it doesn't matter. You realize that, you know, don't freak out over it. 40s are easier. Then the 50s are even easier yet. What do I know? Depends upon if you're lucky or not. You don't get sick. The book that I know you've all been waiting for, Psychological Nudity, is the title. And here we are, 75 stories from Michael's colorful life history are contained in this limited first edition printing. And you can go to michaelsavage.com and you're going to see the picture of me holding Teddy, my dog. The classic stories I've told on the radio were translated for the written word. And I have to say translated for obvious reasons, because the spoken word and the written word are two different mediums. They're not the same. One Arm Frank, Love by the Sewer Plant, Dead Man's Pants, Savage's Childhood Diet, that's a prescription for a heart attack, Tippy the Dog Dies and is Thrown into a Garbage Truck, When Pasta Was Spaghetti, From Immigrant Son to Radio Stardom, and many more favorites are in this book, 75, by the way. Are there political stories? A few. The Medical Reason Why Liberalism is a Mental Disorder, Debunking Man-Induced Global Warming, Republicans Should Treat Voters Like Restaurant Customers, Psychological Nudity. It's a must for everyone who has read a Savage book. It's an original. Kindly go to michaelsavage.com, review the cover, click, and there it is, and I'll know how many you print. 5 o'clock like clockwork after a hard day in high school. My mother, God bless her, would put a tray out for me. Oh, was I spoiled. I'm making up for it now. I'm working my butt off, but the tray, the steak, the French fry. I'm talking French fries. Steak, French fries. Here's the diet I had, the healthful diet. Breakfast was ham and eggs with a jelly donut. Lunch was something light like a meatloaf sandwich with French fries. Dinner was something light like either steak or pot roast with some heavy potato dish, topped off with the health-enhancing cherry vanilla ice cream and a piece of pie. And maybe a glass of milk to go with it, and possibly a... This went on for years. Now, if I were designing an experiment to kill a child, and I'm not suggesting that that's what was going on here. If I were to design an experiment, a cardiotoxic diet to kill a pig in a laboratory, I'd give him that diet for like three months. The pig would roll over and drop dead of an occlusion. I don't know. I'm still kicking. So it has something to do with nothing to do with. You know, something to do with nothing to do with it. Now, admittedly, because my father, may rest in peace, died of a heart attack young, and my grandfather, then I was like reaching. Well, what about great-grandfather back in the old country? I was hanging on the hope that he lived to 103. Oh, he too died at 39. Oh, thank you. Three generations dead. I'm the oldest living savage in the history of the family. So every day is like a miracle. Well, that's why I went into nutrition. That's why I searched for the secret to longevity for years in the jungles of the South Seas. Go on my website, see if I'm making it up. I'm one of the original ethnobotanists in the field. And what I discovered is very, very little is known. But what is known is very important. Which vitamins you take and in what proportions, which foods you eat and in what proportions, and which herbs to take when. What is known is very interesting, and it is a lifesaver. I'm telling you, it is. And I am a fanatic about mega nutrition. I'm a fanatic about large doses of vitamins.
Savage. representative of the global community, a visitor from abroad. I don't want to come across a little bit biased, but could I please ask of you, people of America, to please elect Barack Obama. Please. On behalf of the world. I do feel a little bit sorry for a daughter getting all pregnant. Poor kid.
Turn off that limey bum. No, turn off that MTV garbage can. Host of the MTV Video Music Awards. You hear what the children are being brainwashed with this filth? Selling them drugs, sex, and communism? Why, you expect something different? You expect unbiased reportage on MTV? I can give you what the acronym stands for, but I'm on the radio and I prefer not to. Just take the M, just take the T, and just take the V and put in the words of choice. Okay, here we are. It's a choice between somebody who shot rockets from a flying jet at our enemies and someone who shot staples into telephone poles in Chicago. That's the choice, the overt choice. On a national security level, it's McCain all the way. On many other levels, there's almost no difference between either of them. Make no mistake about it. They both agree in the bailout of Freddie Mae and Fannie Mae. They both will not convene a hearing and arrest anyone for having ripped off the public. So what's the difference here on the other levels? So on the terms of national security, you have to go with McCain. On everything else, it's one and the same. Hey, that's pretty good. In terms of national security, it's John McCain. In terms of everything else, it's one and the same. Yep, one man's opinion. I'll tell you what keeps me going. Let me give you an example. I'm jaundiced on the political system. I'm jaundiced that we have such candidates as we have. Let's not make any mistake about it. John McCain is not George Washington all of a sudden. Just compared to Obama, you know, it's the only choice we have. But, like, over the weekend, I'll give you some stories over the weekend to show you why. I run into people from different walks of life. Saturday night, I went to my favorite Italian restaurant, North Beach Restaurant. And the owner, Lorenzo, is a friend of mine. So he knows I'm a picky guy with seating, and it's packed in there. So I come in. I drove, whatever, come in. Crowded. You couldn't even get in front of the joint. So I said, Lorenzo, I'm here. I need a table within 2 minutes or I'm leaving. He knows it's a joke. He says, Michael, I got three tables reserved for you. I said, what do you mean three tables? He says, I know you're difficult to seat. He said, I got a table for you in the right corner by the window. I got a table for you in the left corner by the window I'm holding. And I'm holding one inside in case you want quiet. Now, this is in a packed Italian restaurant. I swear to God, the line was like 10 deep going out the door. I said, I love you for this. I said, all right, take the one over in the corner. So we had a great meal. I won't tell. As time goes on, I'll tell you what we talked about. Great conversation. And later on, we went for a walk through North Beach in San Francisco after the meal. My family and Lorenzo went to look at a certain building. And we go in, and this condo is not yet finished that's being built over there. And there's a night watchman with a nursing pit bull. I never saw one. It's kind of an ugly sight. It's like disconnected, a nursing pit bull. So I said, you have to push a gate open. There's no lights on, and the condo's unfinished. It's at night with flashlights, and the dog, and he's on a metal chain holding the dog back. And the guy has a flashlight, and we said, does she have puppies? No, it's a false pregnancy. I said, what? I never heard of a false pregnancy. I don't even understand that one. We go in, and we look at the building, and we're leaving. The guy says, the night watchman says, are you Michael Savage? I recognize your voice. Yes, he said, I love your show. I love the Savage Nation. Now, that's on one level. Sunday night, I go visit my other friend with Teddy because I don't want to go to a restaurant. I want to be with my dog. The choice is to visit my friend and go to his apartment, which we were going to do. So I said, well, let's go out and pick up a pizza. I don't even want it delivered. Let's drive around and look and walk with the dog. So he pulls up on a curbside because there's no parking in San Francisco. I'm just sitting in the car with Teddy. He goes in to pick up the pizza and the spaghetti and the salad. And I had just bought a six-pack. I had a miserable hangover from the night before. This was a mean one. It was my fault. I had drunk champagne before going out, which I never do. And I'll tell you, you know, it backs up to a tragic story, which I don't want to go into. It was a man that I know vaguely in his family who's pretty sick. And he was with his children and his grandchild on my boat. And I got to tell you something. It made me recognize that the hourglass, you know, tilts for all of us. You can't tilt the hourglass back. Let me put it to you that way. So it wasn't depression. It was actually the reverse of depression. to see a guy go from health to this, you know, and the passing of time, I can't explain it. So I said to my son when he came over, let me open a bottle of champagne. And he knows I don't drink it. He knows I get sick from it. He said, Dad, you really want to do that before dinner? Yeah, I got to do it. I got to celebrate. So I drank the champagne. Then I drank tons of wine. The next day, I was death warmed over. So now, speed the clock forward. I'm sitting outside the pizzeria, and I'm dying for a drink. I hadn't had one all day. And you know the cure. The cure is another drink. So I had stopped at a liquor store to pick up a six-pack in the car, but I didn't have an opener. And I'm telling you, my head was killing me, and I was waiting all day for this beer. So I didn't have an opener. I'm saying, Dan, until he gets the pizza, until I wind up in his apartment, it's another 15 minutes. I need a drink in the car. Lo and behold, a middle-aged woman comes up to the car. She looks in, and it's dark, and she says, Michael Savage? Are you Michael Savage? I said, yes. She says, oh, my God, my husband and I, we're great fans, blah, blah, blah. I said, well, I said, as long as you're a friend, not a foe. I said, could you do me a favor since you love the show so much? She says, what? I said, could you please go in that pizzeria and get a bottle opener for me, a bottle, like a church key? So she goes inside. I don't hear from her. She walks out 2 minutes later holding a church key. I said, thank you very much, madam. I open up my beer. I pour myself a nice swig out of the bottle, like half the bottle in one slug. And then my friend comes out with the pizza, and she says to him, what's that guy's name in the car? And he doesn't hesitate. He says, Michael Savage. He says, oh, my God, I love his show. Thank you. I said, well, let me tell you something. You rewarded me greatly tonight by getting me that opener. So it's simple life 101. I mean, what does it come down to? You know what it comes down to? It comes down to being with friends and having a family that you love and praying to God that you don't get sick. That's all. What else is there? What are you gonna pray for? But going out on the boat, you know, I don't want to go into details because then I have to describe the people and I don't want to embarrass them. But to see the three generations on the boat and to see the passing of the torch, so to speak, and all of that. And, you know, then we got Maudlin toward the end, just he and I, you know, 2 seconds on the way out the boat and the door, walking to the car. I said, let's not talk about that. I said, let's talk about Thanksgiving. I said, if you'll promise me you'll be around and come over for Thanksgiving, I said, I'll rent another restaurant. I'll rent the Polka Band. We'll have a great Thanksgiving dinner again. And that's it. That's the whole story in a nutshell. Life is a polka dance, and then it's over. Life is a brief dance in the sun, and then it's over. Life is the Savage Nation. Connecticut Bob, you're on the air. Welcome. What's on your mind?
Hey, Michael. I love your show. You always bring back great memories for me, too. You know,
Thank you.
I'm a Hartford native.
You know what? That's good. We got to live a little bit in memories because it's all about life. If you have no memories, you're not alive. You're a robot.
Well, my ex-wife and I, we took a trip to Boston 1 year, and it was like an anniversary. And we found this tiny little Italian restaurant in Boston. It was on a hole in a wall, and the floors were crooked and you know, all warped and everything. And we sat down and had a wonderful dinner, and this old Italian waiter came up to us, you know, with the towel over the arm. And he served us our salad. He comes back and takes the salad, and he looked at me and goes, you don't like red onions? I said, no, I don't care for onions. He goes, oh, you got the onions. They're good for you.
He's right. He's 100% right. I eat onions and I eat garlic every day. I have for 35 years. I mean, you don't want to be around me at night, but okay. It's tremendous compounds in those particular products.
Heartburn.
So thank you for the call. Play the beer barrel polka for a minute. They'll roll out the barrel. Got a migraine. Thinking of having a big election eve rally. I can't do it though. Where am I going to do it? Imagine if I, because you know this, turn it off already. I did that 1 year. It was such trouble. It was unbelievable. But it'd be nice to have rent the stadium, put up the giant screens, and have an election eve, you know, thing for the regular people. Where am I going to do this though? If I have a national show, it's not like I'm a local guy and I could do it, you know, for 5,000 people. I could probably fill 100,000 seat arena if I wanted to do a gigantic rally on election eve, you know, with entertainment and speakers and the Savagettes and dogs and cats and pregnant Rottweilers, whatever. I'm not going to do it. I'll wind up like everybody else drinking a beer watching the election with the idiots. They'll have the results for you already. They have the results already, by the way. There's no need to even wait. I love when they start and they get like almost hysterical. They put on the headset. You think, God, they're landing the Apollo mission. schmucks running around with the headsets over the last 2 weeks. How did we survive that together? How did we come through this together? How did we get through 2 weeks of Stalinist propaganda like this, where there was not one argument over one position? I don't think you understand, but this was the first political season for a presidential election that I saw no arguments on the floor of the convention, where different planks were brought forward for discussion. That was the original purpose of a convention, may I remind you, ladies and gentlemen of the Savage Nation. There was not a reason to get drunk and get hookers. That wasn't the original purpose, a propaganda show, and to be with ladies of the night in Denver. The original purpose of the convention was to argue out various platforms or planks to be put into the platform of the party for the election. But since it's all in advance, worked out in advance, and it's all a propaganda play, like a kabuki theater play, there was no argument. When did you see the Democrats arguing over, well, we should argue over immigration? Did you see the great Republicans arguing over a plank? Deport the illegals, or let's end anchor babies, or let's not bail out Freddie Mac, or let's arrest the directors of Freddie Mae and Freddie Mac. I didn't see those planks being argued. Did you see a plank being argued that voting in America should only be reserved for citizens? No. Did you see a plank from the great differential Republican Party on anything to do with our culture? I didn't. And so, sure, there's differences, very small ones, and I understand that 2 degrees of separation can be gigantic downstream. Certainly, I understand that. I'm not a child. I understand what a 2 degrees of separation means when it comes to the difference between John McCain and Barack Hussein Obama with regards to national security. On that basis alone, I certainly will vote for McCain. But make no mistake about it, I'm not expecting any difference between McCain and Bush. It will be more of the same because he's a front man for the Republican power structure. It's as simple as that. We have no free market left in this country. Make no mistake about it. This country has been socialized under George Bush. And on that note, we'll go back to the original stories of the bailout of Freddie Mae and Freddie Mac, or Fannie, whatever they call it. I don't like the names even. What is Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac? Does anyone really know? Have you thought about that? What is that? When did it ever become? When did they become public? Well, they became public. They were originally public. Originally, the government backed these mortgages. Then they were privatized. And so the privateers who they were privatized for robbed them blind over the last 10 years, profited from this privatization. And the minute they have to pay back the bum, Bush bails them out with your money. That's socialism. Las Vegas, Diana, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. I really enjoy your program, and I don't want to scream in your ear, but I am so angry. What are we going to get out of this when Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac get in the black again?
Well, what do you mean get in the black again? What are you getting out of it now? What you got already is a diminishing value of the dollar. What you got already is the doubling of the national debt over the weekend. That's what you got already.
Plus, we're paying for it. And in the meantime, we've been calling Washington and the White House.
Well, call John McCain. Ask him, as a fiscal conservative, what he's going to do about it. Ask John McCain's campaign people if they're going to hold hearings and arrest the responsible thieves.
You ask him any of the key questions about borders, culture, and anything else, and they don't want to talk about it. And when they do call me for all these freaking polls that they take, I tell them, this is ridiculous. You write down what I say. I'm not answering your questions. I'm telling you what I want heard.
Every time I received a mailer from any of the parties, which was a few times over the last few years, I would take the return envelope, which had a stamp on prepaid, and I would say, until you close the borders, don't bother me again. And I think millions of people did that. Did it have any effect on this campaign? Have you heard McCain arguing with Obama? Have you heard any of the party officials arguing over immigration? Answer no, because they both are the same on illegal immigration. That's the point. I can't even talk about it. I really don't want to talk. I'd rather talk about stories right now the way I feel. I've already given you the two political stories of the day, Obama admitting he's a Muslim and ABC covering for him, and the fact of the matter that Bush has my headline is this: Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac CEO scam taxpayers with huge severance packages. Read it on my website. And then read the next one. Here's my real headline underneath that on michaelsavage.com. Bush bails out buddies. End of Republican free market rubbish talk. That's down to earth. And below that is an even better headline. U.S. is more communist than China, says one of the major league capitalists from Wall Street, that the U.S. is more communist than China. Now, underneath it, you see Chavez with a red beret, and it says Russia to hold military exercise with Venezuela. But if Chavez had nationalized banks the way Bush just did, you'd be screaming for an invasion. Did you hear what I just said to you? So what can we do about it? I haven't any idea. I haven't any idea. Now, listen to this clip 18, an ad for – I got to say, I'm going to vote for McCain, but McCain and Palin now are calling themselves original mavericks. Let me explain to you. You can't be a maverick and be a major party candidate. It's impossible. If you're a maverick, you wind up either on talk radio or in prison. Play the ad.
The original mavericks. He fights pork barrel spending. She stopped the breach to nowhere. He took on the drug industry. She took on big oil. He battled Republicans and reformed Washington. She battled Republicans and reformed
Alaska.
I heard
enough. I'm trying to show you what rubbish it all is. Okay? Now play clip 19.
Who is the tall, dark stranger there? Maverick is the name. Riding the trail to who knows where. Luck is his companion.
Lupkus is the name?
Is his game. Smooth as a handle on a
50s
gun.
Were horrible.
Maverick is the name.
Horrible.
Right.
Half the men in New York became gay from the 50s, from the television shows, the weddings. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is that time of year again on the Savage Nation. Now, what do I mean by that time of year? It's after the conventions. Well, it's after the summer, number one. After the two Stalinist conventions, number two. It's after Labor Day, number three. The children are back in school. The families are back home. So, and it's just before the debates begin in 2 weeks. I got to take a vacation. The pressure's upon me to take a week or two off. But here's the problem. It's terrifying. So I had like a fantasy over the weekend. I said, aha, I tell you what I'll do. I will fly to Paris for 5 nights, and all I will do is eat. I said, I don't even like the French.
I love Paris.
No music. So I said, no, I don't like the French. I'm not going to do it. I wouldn't do this anyway. So then I said, well, I'll tell you, I think I'll go to Italy for 5 nights, and all I'll do is eat and drink. Then I got such a hangover Saturday night from what I drank. What's the point of eating and drinking? I'm only going to get sick for 5 nights. Then I have to fly back and go through that decompression for 3 days. So that neutralized that fantasy, okay? So then I said, okay, you've always wanted to do a coastal cruise off the coast of California, but your boat is too small and most yachts are too small and ocean liners are too big. So here's the perfect one. It's a small ocean liner and it goes from Vancouver to Los Angeles. Let's go to that. So I go on the brochure. I click, click, click. The suite, the outdoor. And right away I see that the people with the tuxedos are ready. The ads of the gray-haired people dancing on the deck. Then I see the wonderful party people that you meet in the elevator, the wonderful, the high variety of people that you meet on the ship, the poseurs. And I said, nope, that's it. It's not going to work. Then I imagine a cigar smoker next to me. Imagine being on a ship. You have let's say you get the best suite on the ship, and a guy underneath you likes cigars. And he lights up every morning and every night. He's smoking a cigar, and it wafts up into your room, and you're stuck on the ship for a week. So that neutralized that. See, my problem is this. I have the tastes of a sultan and the income that doesn't match it. It's not like I'm a poor man, but you see, no matter how much money you make, unless you're a thief, unless you're an absolute thief, apparently, or extremely lucky, you cannot have a yacht that's 160 feet long with your own crew. Sure, you could. You can lease something like that, charter it for a week for about $150,000. But I'm not going to take that kind of money out of my bank account and go charter a yacht for a week to make believe that I'm like a big, big cheesecake here. So I won't go anywhere.
Savage.
Warning: The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now,
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Representative of the global community, a visitor from abroad, I don't want to come across a little bit biased, but could I please ask of you, people of America, to please elect Barack Obama, please, on behalf of the world.
Let's not play games. What I was suggesting, you're absolutely right that John McCain has not talked about my Muslim faith, and you're absolutely right that has not
Christian
come...
faith.
My Christian faith.
Blue Monday, how I hate Blue Monday. Got to work, plan to sleep all day.
He's in trouble. In fact, it may be over already. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. There's no question he's been slipping in the polls, particularly since Palin arrived on the scene. That we know. I mean, that's a given. But, you know, it's amazing to me that he slips on the Muslim thing. He didn't say my alleged Muslim faith. He said that McCain never raises the issue of my Muslim faith, and he says it matter-of-factly and categorically in almost a positive way about John McCain, and it takes Stephanopoulos to step in and say, you mean your Christian faith. Now, if that doesn't alert you to something, you are a dummy. You are like wallpaper, and you deserve a communist government. You deserve to have a ring in your nose. You deserve to be a slave, because that's what you're going to wind up being, unless you comprehend what's at stake here. Am I thrilled with John McCain on national security? Yes, as I have to say, as I posted on michaelsavage.com. On national security, taking one issue and one issue alone, it is a choice between someone who shot rockets at our enemies from a jet he was flying in battle against someone who shot staples into a telephone pole. So there's no choice whatsoever. When it comes to national security, it's McCain 100 and Obama 0. But when we look at the Freddie Mae and the Fannie Mae, whatever bailout, and we see that this is communism by any other name, fiscal socialism, it is thievery, whichever way you want to put it, and we don't hear any difference between Obama and McCain. We understand that McCain will be Bush 3, and Obama will be either an unknown or Marx 2. And if it's a choice between... Bush 3 and Marx 2, I'll take Bush 3. But I don't expect much of a difference in how things are being run with McCain. He's no outsider. He's an insider. Nobody remains in Washington that long and can call themselves an outsider. That's a complete lie. It's propaganda. You should know that by now. So you've got an insider pretending to be an outsider pretending to be an insider, and then you've got to decide where you want to go with it. Well, when you see a bailout of this Fannie, Freddie, whatever, you're talking about the nationalization of banks to protect certain interests on Wall Street. And certain people have profited greatly from this. There are names of these people. We read them on the air on this show. We read the directorship. They include such luminaries as Louis Frey, the former FBI director. I'm not blaming him for this, but certainly if you have a corporation that goes bankrupt and you see people profited on its way down, you'd hold a hearing on it. Any company that has a thing like this is called before some kind of oversight board, any public company, and people do pay for this. After all, there are people in prison right now. May I remind you that there's a former congressman, a former war hero, a Vietnam ace, a great man, who was put in prison for 7.5 years for profiting much less than some of these Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac crooks have profited. Why is it that this congressman is still in prison while they're still walking the streets and they're about to collect $14 million or $7 million? The answer is because they're more cunning than he is. The answer is because Duke Cunningham was not cunning. He was just a crook, an honest crook, let's put it to you that way. These people are cunning crooks. They know how to get away with it because every step of the way they use lawyers. Does that make it right? No, it doesn't make it right. It makes it wrong and it makes it corrupt and it makes it evil. Who do we turn to? Which party do you want me to turn to and ask for an official hearing on the debacle of fiscal socialism, the bailout of these two companies. Which official in the United States government, shall I go to a Democrat, a liberal Democrat like Charlie Rangel on the House Ways and Means Committee? He's the top-ranking Democrat on a committee that sets taxation. Shall I ask Charlie Rangel about a thing like this when Charlie Rangel is in hot water over some rather petty amounts of money for a condominium that he owns in the Dominican, I don't even know, Haiti, the Dominican Republic or whatever? Shall I ask him? Is it a Democrat who's going to save us? Or shall I ask the Republican on the committee who has said nothing so far? Shall I go to the great Chris Cox, former congressman from Southern California, who was put in as a handpicked overseer of the Securities and Exchange Commission under whose watch this occurred? Shall I find out who's gone to jail so far and which ones have not gone to jail who ought to be indicted and investigated in order to retain some semblance of fairness in this country? I don't know who to turn to. Shall I go to someone in the media who could help us with this? Ask yourself why you're not hearing anyone from Fox even. You would expect it from CNN. Well, you would expect it from MSNBC, wouldn't you, the communist network? You'd expect the communist far-left network to be calling for an investigation of board members of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, wouldn't you? But they're not doing it either. Why? I explained to you in the last hour because of interlocking corporate directorships. If you investigate General Electric, you'll find that some of the board members of General Electric also sit on the boards of these banks or on companies related to these banks or on companies that profited from business with these banks. And that's why the puppets, the empty suits, the empty skirts on MSNBC, the far left network is not calling for an investigation. Maybe they are. I haven't seen it. How come Fox isn't calling for an investigation of Freddie Mae and Fannie Mac? Well, I guess if you investigate the board of directors of that network, the ownership of that network, you may find some interlocking corporate directorships with regard to companies that have benefited from their relationships with those banks that have now been bailed out by George Bush. And so, therefore, you're not hearing anything about an investigation from either the so-called conservative Fox or the so-called liberal MSNBC. You don't hear it much from people in radio because of the same factors. They know which way, who butters their bread. And so here we are. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. It's no wonder that I'd rather just tell family stories and talk about psychological nudity. I am fed up. I am jaundiced with the political situation. I frankly don't need a fairness doctrine. I will practice the fairness doctrine myself. I'll stop talking about politics altogether, and I'll simply sit here and talk about family stories and my visits to North Beach and to Chinatown for the rest of my radio career. I'd have a better time, and so would you. Trust me, I'll have a better time, and so would you, if I stopped it, because there's no point to it. When you have a government that is this distanced from the people, that is this controlled by propaganda, 24/7 propaganda, again, I have to go back to the two conventions. A convention was originally a place where various factions argued over various policies that should be part of the party's platform. There was not one argument at the Republican convention nor the Democrat convention. There were no plank arguments. Why? Because the conventions have no meaning. They're propaganda shows. They're puppet shows. They're Stalinist puppet shows. Don't you understand that you're living not only in the equivalent of a communism when it comes to your fiscal government, but the political structure itself is very close to a communist government in the sense that there's no dissent. Sure, there's dissent on a show like this, but I'm marginalized. I'm reviled. I'm cast out by all those in the media because I'm the only one telling you like it is. I'll be right back. Savage. You know, by now you've probably read that the pre-orders of my book, Psychological Nudity, has outsold Nancy Pelosi's first week sales numbers. Well, it's true. And joining us today is Andrew Durham to talk to us about why he thinks more people are interested about my autobiographical stories than the speaker's autobiography. Despite all the publicity, they don't care. Andrew Durham, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on again. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
You've written a commentary online about this. Why did you feel the need to write the commentary? I didn't ask you to do it.
Well, I had read about the Nancy Pelosi autobiography. And while I'm never one to take any joy in somebody's bad fortune, it was insult upon injury to the worst Congress in American history. And then I heard that you were doing an autobiography and that it had already sold more without even having existed yet, basically. And so I had to say something. I mean, this is one of those things you just don't not talk about. Because there's a great deal of irony here, and there's also a great deal of vindication for what people actually want to hear about and what people actually care about, as opposed to what somebody actually thinks of their own accomplishments. In Ms. Pelosi's case, I think it's extremely overblown, and I think most of the country agrees with that.
Why do you think my book appeals to so many people?
What I think particularly about this appeals to people is that people care about the person. They don't care about the chronology of events. As I have said before, people tune in to your show because they want to hear you. They don't want to hear Democrat versus Republican. They can get that all over the air throughout the day. People want to hear somebody with a rich background, somebody that's actually led a life. That's not available in a lot of places. I mean, most of the time when you're dealing with on-the-air personalities, you're talking about uneducated people who have basically not been around, as it were. Whereas you've actually done things. You've published 20-some books. And actually had something to say and lived a life to back it up. That's what people are interested in. The issues come out of that. I don't think people most of the time tune in necessarily because of the issue. They want to hear you, and then they want to hear what you have to say. That's an entirely different order from everything else going on the air.
Is that what's wrong with Pelosi's book?
Basically, nobody cares. It's a life that I don't think anyone has thought about, and I think that simply because it's the first female Speaker of the House is not enough. Certainly, there's no record to go by since she began. As far as I know, the last count was that Congress is mired in 400 to 500 investigations. To me, that is not doing the work of Congress. They have nothing to show for it. She has nothing to show for it, except extreme black and white bipartisan politics. People can get that anywhere. They're not interested. There's no person there that people are interested in reading about. And, you know, I don't mean to make that sound as negative as it does, but I don't know any other way to say it. There's nothing there that interests people. There is no rich life beyond that. Yeah, she was a rich person, but it's not the same thing as having lived a rich life.
Well, how important is personality in between these two books?
Well, that's the whole thing. I mean, the personality is powerful. Your personality is powerful. And that's why it polarizes some people, especially people that don't actually listen to you, you know, which is really easy to do. I mean, anybody can do that. Anyone can lift something out of context and make an issue out of it where it doesn't exist. But those of us who are daily listeners basically tune in to say, you know, how was your day? And then everything else follows along with that. And, you know, if you're not in the mood to talk about something in particular, that's fine. I can't name another radio person or personality that anyone can say that about. People tune in to other people for issues that they already have opinions about. I mean, there's nothing there to stimulate people. It's preaching to the choir, and anybody can get that just by looking in the mirror and talking to themselves. That's why your life is interesting. That's why you make it interesting every day, whether it's a good mood or a bad mood or whatever. It's about the person. It's not about what you can get off the Drudge Report, or what you can get off from some dying newspaper. All that's left, and I don't mean that to be diminutive, but all that's left is the person. That's what's going to survive all of this. Because when you can tune in to a TV show or radio talk show or whatever and predict what's going to be said, then you must look at yourself and say, what's the point?
Psychological nudity has a lot of the stories that made me who I am, while Pelosi's book, well, it seems to be more like bragging than a true autobiography.
Yeah, I can tell you, it says nothing. It makes no assertion. It's basically a see what I've done sort of thing, see what I've done, as opposed to let me show you who I am because of what I've done. She has nothing to show for it. Sorry to say that, but anybody who pays any attention to what's going on knows that this Congress is the worst, and it has no record, none, zero. Now, people like yourself, who have, like I said in the article, been born into the struggle, have something to show for it, as does everyone that listens. Everyone that listens is born into the struggle. I think there's a lot of people who were maybe self-made because they struggled and worked and sweated for it their whole life. That's what they hear every single night. They don't hear somebody traveling around in a jet going to golf games. They don't hear people in the good old boy network talking about who they know and who they had dinner with the night before. No matter what your education, your degrees, and so forth and so on, it still comes down to the human being, and that's who tunes in, not pundits. That's the way it's always going to be, and that's what makes it unique. And that's why people care about this autobiography and these stories, because they're stories of truth. They're not stories of exaggeration. They're not stories to make you look a certain way. They're stories of what happened. And that's the stuff that history is made of, and that's the stuff a life is made of, not a background, not a cover story, not something to get somebody in somewhere in the future. This is what happened. You lived it. People want to hear it. And they want to hear it over and over again, and you know that. They ask you for it. And it's just not able to be found anywhere else.
Andrew Durham, thank you again for being on The Savage Nation.
Thank you very much for having me on. It was a pleasure to write the piece. I mean, it's something that came to me in an afternoon. It's like the perfect irony of the situation just needed to be brought out, especially in light of some of the controversy or non-controversies, in my opinion, you know, of the last year.
The book that I know you've all been waiting for, Psychological Nudity, is the title. And here we are, 75 stories from Michael's colorful life history are contained in this limited first edition printing. And you can go to michaelsavage.com and you're going to see the picture of me holding Teddy, my dog. The classic stories I've told on the radio were translated for the written word. Psychological Nudity, it's a must for everyone who's read a Savage book. It's an original. Kindly go to michaelsavage.com, review the cover, click, and there it is, and I'll know how many you print. Obama starting to drop in popularity, even the media is starting to take note and trying to spin their chosen one back into the lead. Jeff Kuhner with the Washington Times joins us today to tell us about a recent column he wrote on why he feels the Democratic Party is doomed to defeat. Jeffrey, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's always a pleasure to be on your show. Thanks for having me.
Well, what's the background on your article?
Well, Michael, what my sources are telling me here in Washington is that the Democrats, contrary to conventional wisdom, are in serious jeopardy of losing the White House. A lot of Democratic operatives feel very confident that the Democrats will increase their majorities in the House, in the Senate, and in state races. The problem is they have a defective candidate in Barack Obama. He has been slipping in the polls over the last couple of weeks. He did not get the kind of bounce from the convention that he should have gotten, 75,000 screaming fans with the whole spectacle. And one of the reasons is this, Michael. Obama made a fatal mistake, I believe, in picking Joe Biden as his vice presidential running mate. It was the worst possible pick he could make. One, he picked him solely for Biden's supposed national security experience. But by picking Biden, Obama tacitly acknowledged the criticisms against him by John McCain and the Republicans that he is weak on foreign policy. Secondly, Michael, and most importantly, the biggest mistake Obama made was in picking Joe Biden for this reason. Biden is the consummate Washington insider. He is a man who has been in the Senate for over 30 years. He is somebody who is known in this city as an egomaniac, somebody who loves to play power games. He loves to be the chair of numerous committees. He is somebody who has been in bed with lobbyists for decades. In other words, he embodies the special interests, the corruption, and the obsession with power that, frankly, most Americans find disgusting and repulsive.
I thought this was the type of politics that Obama was going to change.
This is what really appealed to many people initially. He was the outsider. He was the maverick. He was the one who faced down the Clinton political machine. He was the one that was going to come in and, as he put it, chase the money changers out of the political temple in Washington. He was going to get rid of K Street, the lobbyists, the special interest groups, all of the corruption that has been going on in this city now for decades and decades. What does he do? He picks one of the most corrupt, venal, Washington inside power politicians that this city has ever seen. It undercuts the very basis and legitimacy of Obama's candidacy. And Michael, I got to tell you, despite what the mainstream media is saying in public, despite what many Democratic spin doctors are saying in public, privately, they now believe that McCain is in the lead, and it is now his race to lose.
But why pick pro-Soviet Biden? What else is the media saying about Biden?
Michael, that's an excellent question. Even if he wanted to go with somebody with supposed national security experience, he could have gone with somebody, let's say, Sam Nunn, who was a former senator from Georgia. Sam Nunn was somebody who was a genuine anti-communist, somebody who stood up to the Soviets, is very smart on national security issues. Biden is, in fact, the very opposite. He is a fraud. He is somebody who has been portraying himself to be an expert on foreign affairs, somebody who is supposedly well-traveled. But if you look at Biden's voting record, this is a man who in the 1970s voted to cut off funding to our allies in South Vietnam, guaranteeing the fall of South Vietnam and the Holocaust that happened afterwards to the communists in North Vietnam. An absolute disaster for American foreign policy. This is a man who voted against every major missile defense system going back for decades. This is a man who championed appeasement against the Soviet Union. He refused to support the Contras, the anti-communist insurgents in Nicaragua against the ruling Marxist Sandinistas. This is a man who throughout the 1990s had no idea of the gathering storm of Islamic fascism and Islamic terrorism. He has been wrong on almost every major issue of the day. And yet the Democrats throw this guy out there as some sort of embodiment of Senate wisdom, literally a profile in courage, this supposedly great statesman, when in fact he isn't. Is they are arguing that somehow now all of a sudden Joe Biden, maybe one of the most boring men in the Senate, is suddenly now quote-unquote, and this is like from Chuck Todd from MSNBC, he's a brilliant hand-to-hand campaigner. He's the guy that apparently can go into the beer halls in Scranton, Pennsylvania, or go into places in Des Moines, Iowa, and shake hands with people, you know, and sort of get in there and appeal to working-class voters. Well, my question to everybody in the mainstream media is, if he's this brilliant hand-to-hand campaigner, why did he get his clock cleaned in Iowa? Why was he decimated in Iowa and, in fact, couldn't continue his Democratic primary campaign? He is a man with very little charisma, very little appeal. Most Americans can see him for the Washington machine man that he is. And, you know, it's a disastrous pick. And the reason why the Obama people went with Biden was a very simple one. After Obama's European tour in the summer, when McCain began to run ad after ad after ad, comparing Obama to Paris Hilton, to Britney Spears, in other words, as the ultimate political celebrity candidate, and they saw their numbers tanking, the Democrats panicked. And they said, let's go with somebody who we think can add credibility, can add experience, can add a certain amount of strength to the ticket. And so they went with Biden. But by going with Biden, they have now given McCain a huge opening. He has exploited that opening. And Michael, I'm going to say it now. I've said it in my recent column, and I will say it now on the air. John McCain will be the next president of the United States. Obama will not win because the Americans will see him for the con man and the fraud that he is.
Do you think their failure to cover up Obama's radical leftist tie-ins have something to do with the drop in poll numbers as well?
Michael, that's the other thing I think Obama's people should be very worried about. I think that the drop in Obama's poll numbers is just the beginning. What you're going to start seeing now coming out in September and October, despite the best efforts of a compliant media to cover up a lot of Obama's background and his past, is you will see deeper associations between Obama and Bill Ayers, the former Weather Underground terrorist who bombed the Pentagon, bombed Capitol Hill, bombed police stations. This is a man who is an unrepentant terrorist. What we're now finding out is Obama has lied about his connections with Ayers. He has claimed that this was very superficial. They hardly knew each other. They sat on a few boards together. That was all there was to it. What we're now slowly finding out is that their connection was closer than Obama has made it seem, has let on in the past, that these people knew each other. They clearly now share very similar political views. They run in the same circles, and they run with the same crowds. What we're also going to now find out is that Obama's association with Reverend Jeremiah Wright is, again, not what Obama said it was. Obama claimed, when all of the inflammatory statements made by Wright, where he attacked America, called it the U.S. KKK of A, and on, he was somehow outraged. He was shocked. Obama was absolutely shocked. He couldn't believe that his former pastor had said that. Well, all you have to do is read Obama's own autobiography, Dreams from My Father, published in 1995. And, Michael, this was a book that was written before Obama decided to embark upon a full-time career in politics. So it's a more honest book than the other book, The Audacity of Hope. In Dreams from My Father, Obama quotes the speech given by Reverend Wright that supposedly so exhilarated Obama, so electrified Obama, that he had to become a member of Reverend Wright's church. In that speech that Obama quotes in his own autobiography, he quotes Reverend Wright as saying, quote, "The white man's greed runs the world," end of quote. In other words, he knew from the very inception that Reverend Wright was a fervent anti-American leftist who despises whites, who is a black nationalist, who is somebody who is clearly a radical and an America hater. For Obama to now claim that this is not the case, again, he is lying. And in the end, politicians can lie here, they can lie there. But when you keep lying consistently over a pattern, over many decades, about many of your associations, claiming that somehow, oh no, Bill Ayers was just on a board. Oh no, Reverend Wright, I never heard him say a negative thing about America. Even though consistently that's all Reverend Wright's been saying for the last 20 years. You can run down a list. In the end, lie after lie after lie is going to show Obama for the fraud that he is. And in the end, Michael, I believe the American people will see through him. And it will not just be a victory for McCain. I believe McCain will win decisively in November.
Jeffrey Kuna, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Michael, thank you so much. Take care, and I'll speak to you soon.
Savage.
Washington ignored the warning signs in the housing and financial markets and has been unwilling to take the kinds of action that I've been advocating for over 2 years to crack down on reckless borrowers and help struggling homeowners.
Well, you see, he's parsing the truth. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. Reckless homeowners? Sure. How about criminal bankers? Now, you got to ask yourself why Obama, who was allegedly the man of the people, the Robin Hood's going to take from the rich and give to the poor, is not saying anything about putting in seeking justice for the taxpayers. And he's going to hold investigations when he becomes president. And he's going to pursue the individuals who may have robbed the Treasury to the extent of the law. How come he didn't say that? The answer is because he won't do it. And the reason he won't do it is because both parties are in bed with the banking industry. Both parties are owned by the banking industry. Both parties are the banking industry, and the banking industry controls the government. Now, I don't want to talk about 9/11. It's not because I'm not patriotic. I'd rather talk about 1938. On 9/11, I'd like to talk about the financial 9/11 that we are having right now in the midst of this presidential campaign. We are in the midst of a financial 9/11. No, it was not as dramatic as airplanes crashing into the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. But as sure as I am sitting here, the devastation will be just as deep, if not even deeper. Unless we, the people, demand an immediate and honest federal hearing on the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac debacle. Who benefited? Who benefited? And what they're going to do about it? I'm afraid that we'll never get to the bottom of the truth here. 1938. What happened? Fannie Mae is created as part of Franklin Delano Roosevelt's New Deal. He is a socialist. Now, when he did it, for the last 60 years, we've heard that Franklin Roosevelt was a socialist. But Bush just did the same thing. And there's no outcry saying Bush is a socialist. But Bush is no different than FDR. Why did FDR create Fannie Mae as part of his New Deal? because the national housing market collapsed after the Great Depression. Private lenders did not want to invest in home loans. So the government establishes Fannie Mae in order to establish, to provide local banks with federal money to finance home mortgages in an attempt to raise levels of home ownership and the availability of affordable housing. It made sense then, kickstart the housing market. Initially, Fannie Mae worked well. It operated like a national savings and loan. It allowed local banks to charge low interest rates on mortgages for the benefit of the home buyer. But this led to the development of what is known as the secondary mortgage market. Let's skip forward now. For the first 30 years after its inception, Fannie Mae was a monopoly over the secondary mortgage market. In 1968, we had the Vietnam War. The national budget became a problem, just as the national budget is a problem because of Bush's wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Rightly or wrongly, whether you like the war or against the war or for the war, wars are expensive. Wars break nations. Wars have broken nations. Wars will break nations, and I think these wars have broken this nation's economy. So for the first 30 years following its inception, Fannie Mae is a monopoly over the secondary mortgage market. Then in 1968, financial pressures created by the Vietnam War, LBJ privatizes Fannie Mae in order to remove it from the national budget. He takes it off the government books. He says, we're not going to be in the mortgage business, and he turns it over to private bankers. It operates as a GSC, generating profits for stockholders while enjoying the benefits of exemption from taxation and exemption from oversight, and it has an implied government backing. What happens then? Well, it's a monopoly, right? So in order to prevent any further monopolization of the market, a second GSC known as Freddie Mac is created in 1970. And what happens then? Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac then control about 90% of the nation's secondary mortgage market. And they are private. Now they have accounting. They have rubber books. It's worse than Hollywood accounting. It's Wall Street accounting. You've all heard about Hollywood accounting. This is far worse. It's Wall Street accounting. They cook the books. They juggle the books. They keep saying that things are well when they know they're robbing the people blind and they're not in the in a positive cash flow. And they keep stealing money for themselves by giving themselves benefits and advantages and buyouts and this and that. And then all of a sudden, who comes to their aid? Henry Paulson, former CEO of Goldman Sachs, the esteemed investment bank of Wall Street. And he says, well, we're no longer going to be a private company. We're going to take it public. And so now suddenly the wheel turns around and you wake up at the end of 2008 in the middle of a stupid campaign where there's been no virtual argument about anything real. And what happens? You find out that FDR and GHW are the same fiscally. They're both socialists. And now we have again, now we have for the first time in modern history, the nationalization of banks in the United States of America. And over the weekend, according to an expert, the national debt was doubled over the weekend. At least, excuse me, that's what one of the people who's an expert is saying, that over the weekend, the national debt was doubled. And not an outcry. No outcry. Why no outcry? No outcry. Interlocking corporate directorships. If you dig deep enough, and this is a job for a journalist at a great newspaper, you will likely find that individuals who sit on the boards of major news corporations, which own television networks and own newspapers, the board members most likely also sit on the boards that have benefited from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac deals, either in the primary, secondary, or tertiary markets. And consequently, the stories are hushed up. Instead, we're given the rubbish about this and the rubbish about that, and Palin did this, and Obama did that, and Obama said this, and the rubbish said that, and this was a maverick, and maverick, schmaverick. They're all schmavericks and mavericks and this and that, and it comes down to fake personalities run by Hollywood. But the fundamentals are not being discussed. Again, I want to reiterate, on the issue of national security, McCain is 100%, Obama's an unknown, a zero. Got me on that. Terrific. Check that one off. In terms of the bailout of banks and the nationalization of Freddie Mae and Fannie Mae, it's more of the same with John McCain. It is more of the same with John McCain. He says it's a good thing. I say it's a terrible thing. I say the end of the free market is here. I say that the nationalization of any industry is a disaster for the United States of America. What do you say? 1-800-449-8255. If you want to read about what I just said, and I know it sounds complicated, this article, What Are the Origins of Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, from the History News Network by Rob Alford, is now being posted on michaelsavage.com. Bay, we'll put up a call because my telos is down. Go ahead, please. Any caller, go ahead, please. Hello.
Hey, Michael.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Yes, if Jeffrey Shilley and Ken Lay and Dick Cheney were on the boards of Freddie Mae or Fannie Mac, whatever, we might get something going here in the Congress. But where's Rahm Emanuel and Mario Cuomo's son there who headed this thing?
Are you saying that because they're all Democrats on these banks, these banks, that's why there's been no outcry for an investigation from Barney Frank? Barney Frank? The man with the Barney Frank has a corporate investigation, Barney Frank. Leave Barney Frank the great progressive. How come Barney Frank isn't?
I don't want to go there, though.
Yeah, I want to go there, though. I want to go there, though. I want to go there. They're all phonies. All these progressive liars. They're all crooks, every last one of them. But they throw smoke in the eyes of the people. They're for gay rights. They're for this right and that right. And all they do is take all the people with brains and they distract them with issues that have no meaning whatsoever while they're robbing everybody on the way to the Swiss bank. The bailout will hurt you. The bailout has hurt you. The bailout will kill the economy as sure as I'm sitting here. And ladies and gentlemen, this is the only topic that's worth talking about right now. Where does Obama differ from McCain on the issue of the privatization, bailout? That is the socialization of the major banks. It's the Savage Nation. Think about it.
Savage.